It's time to talk about the outdoors in South Alabama. Hunting, fishing, and getting outside along the Great Gulf Coast. It's time to take it outside with FM Talk 106.5 Outdoors. With reports, stories, how-to information, and Dr. Bill's Marine Forecast. Here's Sean Sullivan and Mike Ward.
All right, here we go. FM Talk 106.5 Outdoors on this Mother's Day Eve. Do not forget, in all our discussions of fishing and hunting and all that good stuff, that tomorrow, Mother's Day, don't screw this up. Don't screw this up. I tell you, one of the things about having rain in the mix this weekend is protecting me from myself, because often I've tried the old, okay, honey, I know you're going to sleep late, so what I'm going to do is I'm going to go fish, but I'll be back before you get up, and I'll take one of the kids with me, and the other one won't wake up, and that usually gets me in trouble. So
you know what my wife wants?
Quiet.
Yeah, quiet. Peace. No. Crawfish. How about that? Now, that's a great woman.
Let me write down. This is the list of the reasons Miss Sarah is the most awesome woman on planet Earth just got added to as well there.
All she wants is some crawfish. I said, okay, we'll make that happen.
That's going to be a whole other show, how you tricked her into marrying you. You need to go around the country and put on courses on that. Hi, I'm Mike Ford, and here's how I got a woman that I did not deserve. For sure, man. I'm jealous on this. But yeah, a lot to talk about on today's show, and a lot of it's going to be in some of the things that we've talked about leading up to last week's Conservation Advisory Board meeting. But now we're on the back side of it. It's in the rear view. And let's talk about what it looks like going forward. Starting off with the question about regulation changes for speckled trout and flounder, and the man who's been talking to us about this for the whole process, Director of Alabama Marine Resources, Scott Bannon, joins us now. Hey, Scott.
Hey, guys. How are y'all this morning?
Doing good.
Doing good, Scott.
Hey, great advice on Mother's Day. Don't forget that. And to Mike's credit, I married a wonderful wife, and she's a fantastic mother. We met and married within 3 months because I didn't give her the opportunity to change her mind.
You went ahead and closed the deal before there could be second thought, before she could get a second opinion.
And she's had 24 years to change her mind, so I think I've got her got her convinced.
Well, it took me 4.5 years to convince mine to marry me.
But you know what, Mike? Just the fact that it happened at all. Sorry, man. Both of y'all, lucky guys for sure, as I am on this Mother's Day Eve. But I want to delve into Conservation Advisory Board meeting last week and regulation changes that you've been talking with us about on the show for flounder and speckled trout. What was said at the meeting, and now do we have a final going forward on what the law is?
Sure. So just so we're clear, I did not actually attend the meeting. Kevin Anson, our chief biologist, attended for me. There was no public comment. There was one person from the commercial side of the house that had some public comment, just to ensure that we're fair and equitable to the commercial fishing community. And so we presented our final recommendation to the advisory board to make some changes to the speckled trout and to the flounder. And what those were for the speckled trout would be to create that slot limit 15 to 22 inches with the allowance of one oversize. So you could have one greater than 22 inches. And with a reduction in bag limit to six fish per person, and I know you'll want to have a follow-up conversation about that in a minute. And on the flounder side, that we would reduce the bag limit recreationally to five per person, which is currently at 10, and increase the minimum size length to 14 inches total length. And then we created a trip limit for the commercial side of the house to 30 flounder per person or per vessel.
Okay, and that was changed from before that 30. What was there? Was there a cap, or was it just a?
There is not. There, okay. There has not been.
That's
a
significant
trip limit.
Okay, so that's significant. And that also, what about the closure?
Yes, I'm sorry. There's also going to be a November closure for both recreational and commercial fishermen. And November is that month when those fish make that move from inshore to offshore in their spawning period. And we really had good support from both commercial and recreational anglers that's important. Nowadays, people realize that those are critical times for fish. And so that'll reduce some of that harvest during that peak movement for them.
Okay, so the month of November, no retention, whether you're obviously nobody gigging or nobody netting on the commercial side, and if we catch one hook and line, you turn it back.
That's correct.
Okay. Now, one thing on the commercial side, now you said there was 30 per boat. Is that right, or per person?
30 per person or 30 per boat if it was
That was maximum 30
correct,
per boat.
Make, create that maximum for the vessel.
Yeah, which that is significant.
That is.
When it goes from unlimited amount of flounder you can catch to 30 per vessel per trip, that's significant.
It is, and there's, again, as I mentioned earlier in the year, you know, we really had to look at flounder pretty hard, but we did look at the landings for fishermen and look at the average landings. There are some spiky times of the year. There are times where a 30 fish would be very, very, very low for them. But throughout the year, a 30 fish limit is about an average catch. And again, we have some flexibility in that as we can make regulation changes for the bag limits and things pretty quickly, and I think we've discussed on the show that our goal is that we look at these every year. What are the landings looking like? What are we seeing out there? What size fish are we seeing? And in 3 years, we plug everything back into that stock assessment model, and what is the trend? Is it trending up? Is it stabilizing? Or is it trending down? So
Right. Naturally,
we would love to see an upward tick in both fisheries. I think with trout, it'll come back fairly quick. Flounder may be a little bit more challenging. But if we can at least see some stabilization, that's a win. And if it continues in a downward trend, then we have to really look hard and figure out what's going on in either of those fisheries.
Yeah, again, we'll stick with flounder for a second here. And Scott, that's interesting. I mean, number one, it's just a year-to-year metric versus saying here's a finish line. There's not like a when flounder stocks reach this, then we're changing things back. Is it a year-to-year, or is there a goal line? Is there a finish?
Well, you've seen where we've gotten in the federal fishery where we've set this standard of saying we want to get to this potential unknown, if you ask me. So I have a real concern about saying we want to get to X.
Right.
Because there are some other factors that change in there. And in Alabama, for both of these two species, a lot of it is effort. And so that effort could change, and so then you could modify your rules and your management plan based on the effort. If we continue to see increased effort, then you have to maintain at least what you're doing or maybe tighten things up just because it's based on the sheer number of people pursuing these species. So I don't want to set this goal line that may not be realistic.
Okay. No, I think that's a great thing. I just think it's worth discussing. So that's good. You're not setting that. But, you know, people have asked the question since you've been on with us talking in the past, could there be other issues having affected the flounder? And they go back to the oil spill or something else habitat-wise. That you're not saying that's not a factor, right? It could be.
It could be. And there's and so that's why when you implement these management tools and you see what the fishery is doing, you should see some change. That's the goal, is that you do see some positive change. And if you're not, then you really have to try and find out, are there some other factors? I mean, I don't think there's any doubt that there are some other external factors. We've talked about some low oxygen levels, and so those fish, just like the oysters, are not in the traditional places, but they may be somewhere else, and we just haven't been catching them there. So there are some, I think, some environmental changes that do affect especially bottom-dwelling fish.
Just joining us, talking Director of Alabama Marine Resources, Scott Bannon. Flounder change, once again, we'll recap before we go to the break. Lay it out for folks once more. What's the law now? And when is this? Is this now, or is there a date when this starts?
I anticipate that we start this August 1st, and it'll be increase in the minimum size for flounder to 14 inches total length, reduction in bag limit to 5 per person recreationally, creating a trip limit of 30 fish per person or per boat commercially, and a season closure for both rec and commercial fishermen for the month of November.
All right. So this is something that will be here at the end of the summer. We'll have a long time to talk about it. The other component here is changes to speckled trout, and we'll talk limits, and we'll talk about that in depth when we get back. More with Scott Bannon, Director of Alabama Marine Resources. You've heard the chatter online about what the changes are. Get it from the, I would say, horse's mouth, but he'd come here and hit me. Get it from the director's mouth, and we'll do that when we come back. Y'all stay close. Welcome back. FM Talk 106.5 Outdoors. Sean Sullivan, Mike Ward. Glad to have you all along on this Saturday morning. Remember, the podcast of the show posts up next hour, probably 8:30, maybe by 9. Podcast will be up. You can check that out. Share it with friends out there, because this is a subject people have been talking about. And then once they realize these changes are coming, there's going to be a lot of talk about this over the summer.
A lot of talk.
A lot of talk.
Yeah, has been already.
So we're ringing the phone of the director of Alabama Marine Resources for you this morning and talking with Scott Bannon about these changes. Scott, we were talking about flounder in the last segment. Also, talk about what y'all are doing with Marine Resources to try to put more flounder into the system.
Sure. We have a mariculture center over at our Gulf Shores office where we can breed fish, essentially. We've done some red drum, pompano, and so we're moving into a flounder phase. So we've had some local fishermen and some tournaments and different people catch some flounder for us. So we have about 40-plus fish waiting to breed over there. I guess that's a strange thing to say, but we are completing some of the equipment installations and things. We've partnered with the CCA of Alabama, has helped us purchase some equipment that's required for this. Flounder are very specific in some of the things they require to make sure that they spawn. But our goal is in 2020 that we release 50 to 60,000, probably about one-inch size flounder back into the system here in Alabama.
Man, that's going to be awesome, isn't it?
Yeah.
I think it's going to be good, and we have to be careful. We're going to do some probably some genetic testing and some different things to make sure you don't want to use a terrible pun, muddy the waters too much with inputting too many flounder back into the system that are all genetically from the same fish.
Yeah, because you don't know what that would do to the other fish when they breed down the road.
Yes, so it's going to be a really great program, a learning curve for us on some of the things. We've had some help from a hatchery in Texas that has done tremendous work with flounder, and I think you're going to see some other projects pop up along the Gulf because everyone's having a little bit of a challenge with the flounder.
Oh, that's good to know. So there is something, there's a model to work off of. This place in Texas has been successful with this?
Yes, we actually sent our staff to Texas to talk to them and look at their equipment. And we have great working relationships with all the Gulf states. I know, some of the different fisheries management plans, it seems like sometimes we're combative, but realistically, we all have some of the same end goals in mind, and so we share information and efforts on a very regular basis, and sometimes we may even trade some fish down the road to stabilize those genetic stocks.
A good thing. I guess I got a couple questions here. Right off the bat, do you have any idea of fish school here, Scott? How long, when that fish you turn out, a couple inches, how long before that fish is 14?
Okay, so the males will never get to that. The males max out at about 13 inches, but they're a short-lived fish. They usually go offshore after their first year here in the bay system, and then they generally stay out there. And they only live to be about 3 years old. So it's about a two- or three-year-old female flounder before she gets to around that 14-inch size limit. And so they've already had an opportunity or two, several opportunities to spawn, and then you're going to be able to catch them.
That's going to be, retain them. And so it may be just looking like in 3 years, if this is successful, we might, and like you said, who knows where they all go and all that, but we might see a flush, a peak in a population coming in that window.
Yes, and that's the goal. So we'll use some of our, you use data that you gather from anglers on how many fish are being caught, what size, and those type things, and you may see some changes there. And then we have some efforts where we capture fish of different species and in different areas, and we have these continuous research programs. And so we should start to see some changes in that as well. And that'll be different age classes because we keep all age classes, whereas an angler is only going to keep that minimum size fish, so it's a different age class. So putting everything together, again, hopefully we start to see that there's some positive improvement.
Scott, real quick again, on the limits, to make sure everybody understands what the limits are on flounder, on commercial is 30 fish per boat, per trip.
Person. If you were gigging from the shoreline and you were a commercial fisherman, which does occur some, they would be limited to 30 per person.
Right. Now, recreational is 5 per person, so if you've got 3 people on a boat, you can catch 15.
That's correct. Okay. 3 licensed fishermen are people that are eligible to to maintain their
right. catch. Okay. So just want to make sure everybody understands it's not five fish per boat. It's five fish per person That's on correct. Recreation.
That's correct.
Okay.
All right, Todd. Let's shift gears now to those speckled fish and speckled trout that I think has driven more of the conversation, at least what I've heard, driven more of the conversation than flounder even. I think there's people agreed. I mean, flounder in such a tough situation. Like you said, even commercial people were open to doing these things. What about speckled trout?
Well, they are not quite in the same state as I would say that the flounder are, but we are seeing just so much effort that what we call our SPR, spawning potential ratio, starts to drop. You're not getting enough babies back in the system, so there were concerns with that. And so in our public meetings, we really had tremendous support from the public about creating a slot limit, establishing an upper and lower size limit, and then releasing those bigger females, or bigger any fish, but those females that produce a lot more eggs. A fish over 23 inches versus the one that's just under the minimum size, it's about six times the egg-bearing capacity. Mm-hmm. So putting some more younger females and leaving those older females in the system both have tremendous benefits.
Yeah, and that's one of the things that you and I have talked about here through this year on it. And it's because my mind's always been around the big fish and the big egg layers. But I'm also open-minded to see what we can change. And if more fish get a pass because they didn't get kept at 14, those females now have a 100% chance, better chance of becoming that 23, 24, 25-inch trout that is the big egg layer. So I'm trying to have an open mind about it, and I think that's probably right.
Sure. And we've seen that among the group of people who really target these fish on a real regular basis, some people were already doing that anyway. They felt it was the responsible thing to do. And so it's really refreshing to hear that the public has this awareness, that there's some changes necessary or that they can do things on their own, that just because there's a limit doesn't mean you have to get the limit. So
I would say this. There's part of being an angler that whatever the new constraint is, the man-made constraint, that we will go up to that, if we can, go up to that limit. There's something just deep, I think, deep-seated in being an angler.
Limit.
Yeah, you got the, I mean, it's, yep. And I know there are people, and as I get older, it's not as important, but it's still important. I still hadn't, at 46, I still hadn't grown out of that completely.
Well, it's going to be easier for you to get your limit.
It causes a challenge for me, too.
Okay, yeah. Good. So, the big fish thing, like you said, I've been doing it on my boat a long time. I know a lot of other anglers have been doing it. But the concept I had to get through my head was the value of that 15-inch fish. That's it. Going from 14 and moving up, I and also the reduction by four of the creel that I had to, because I mean, I go back to, the idea that most people, I don't know, y'all have the stats, you can correct me on this. But most people, even though the effort's up, most individuals aren't fishing every day, every week of the month, right? They're not fishing every month of the year.
That's correct. It's just a lot more people are participating in the fishery, which is good because that means that more people are getting to experience that opportunity. And you guys know, I've said it on the show before, it was a struggle for me to think about reducing a bag limit because I do hear it and believe it to a certain extent that once you make a restrictive change, it never comes back. And mm-hmm. And we've talked about triggerfish is one of my heartaches. The fact that we're at one triggerfish bothers me a little bit.
Crazy.
And I would like to see some change in there. And with trout, we're looking, they're pretty quick return, we think, on some of this. And so a three-year look back on this with these changes, our goal is that it makes a very favorable return on our investment here, and then that gives us the opportunity. I will still be here in 3 years.
That's right.
I hope.
You're going to be answering to it.
That's the good thing about you, Scott, is that you're concerned. You're really concerned about it, and you're a fisherman too. Mm-hmm. And that one thing good about the state is not the federal government, but the state is that you can make a quick change.
We can.
Yeah, the government, I mean, it's forever trying to get something done there. But the state, I mean, you can make a quick turn if things look good next year, and you just change it back to whatever you need to change it to next year.
And we wanted, and we kind of set that three-year mark. I talked with our staff and you know, what, how much time do we need to put these things back in the model that it makes sense? And I tell everybody, I kind of use that stock market model, that not to look at it year in a specific right. year, because you get these highs and lows, but what is it looking like over an extended period? And so we felt like 3 years would be enough data to really look at it. But now we will look each year and, sure. and look for any anomalies, or if we see some crazy change, you know, what, why did that occur? And we can look at, you know, there's socioeconomic, there's mm-hmm. a million different things that can impact a fishery.
Yeah, I mean, we don't even have time for the, you know, this, and I don't think it's just unproven, I think it's proven theory, but the idea of effort being shifted, right? If
Absolutely.
You have, you know, you have a certain amount of angler effort that exists, and if you constrain red snapper, for example, that effort, like squeezing a balloon, goes into another fishery. And if you squeeze that fishery, it goes into another fishery.
And, we like to fish in Alabama, so we're going to fish for something.
Right. You yeah. squeeze us on one, right. We move in, so it has these, you know, unintended or maybe intended effects. Hey, we just have a couple minutes before we wrap up, but I do want to talk snapper with you. And speaking of squeezing, you know, we're definitely better off than we have been. Explain to folks what the season looks like for this year, dates, and where the possible end of the snapper season will be.
Okay, so right now what we have set up for the season is June 1st through July 28th. And it's going to be long weekends like we did last year, the three-day weekends, Friday, Saturday, and Sunday. June 1st is actually a Saturday, so that's a short weekend. But on the 4th of July, it's a Thursday. You're going to get the 4th of July, so that'll make that a four-day weekend. And so it's going to be a two-fish limit, 16-inch length, just like we had previously. Snapper check is still a requirement for people to report those fish before they take them off the boat. We have a new app at Outdoor Alabama. Make sure you use the OA, Mike Ward.
Yes.
And you get the report accurately, and the more accurate numbers we get, I promise that data works to your advantage. And what we look at this year is, last year we had fantastic weather, and we had a tremendous amount of effort. So we modeled this year after last year. And if the effort is down, or the weather is bad, or something to that effect, we will monitor it weekly. And there may come a point during the season where we may realize, hey, we can add a couple of days, and we decide where we're going to add those days. We still have a quota that we fish to, so it's just about 1 million pounds. So we cannot exceed that, because then we have to pay it back for next year, and we do not want to do that. But we want to fish pretty close to that quota, and so that's our goal. So we're going to monitor it very, very closely. And if I can give you another weekend, we're going to do that. We just don't know when that might occur. I hope we don't end any shorter than we did last year. I feel very comfortable with the amount of effort this year that we'll at least get these 28 in through July 28th.
Yeah, just to return what Mike was saying about state management, why this is so important, is what you just said, Scott, that if here locally you realize, you know, the whole month of June, the wind blew out of the southeast at 25, or we had a tropical storm or something like that that hit this weekend and then another weekend, you realize that people weren't fishing then. Where a federal model just goes, day happens, fish get caught, number
That's
of
right.
people.
Period.
That's correct.
Yes.
Yes. And we, I know people look at, you know, numbers are going to work against me, but remember, I want the numbers to work for you. That is the entire purpose behind the state management, is that we're adaptable and adjusting to what the anglers in Alabama want and what they need. And, you know, we have this quota, so I want to fish very, very close to that quota.
All right.
Just one thing I want you to do for me, Scott. I want you to get me a private parking spot close to the launch ramp at Dolphin Island. Now, I know you got pull. You can have that happen.
He got the Boggy Point thing
done.
I'm
not sure if Governor Ivey herself can get a parking spot on a weekend at Billy Goat Hole.
You know what? Just an idea.
At least try. It makes me feel better if you just try.
Hearing you two men talking, you know I'm an idea person, which, by the way, let's talk about ramps. Once again, Boggy Point. Yay!
Yeah.
Nice.
Right.
They
nice.
Were the contractor, Gillis Construction, finished 2 weeks ahead of time. Kudos to them for their efforts. They worked through the weekends trying to get that. They realized how important that is to the public. So we things look great down there. We restriped it. I still have some crazy thoughts in my mind how we can get to more parking and more access. And so we're going to continue to work on that.
I can't wait to hear that conversation, have that show. My only last suggestion, because we're right up against the break, but talking about a parking place at Billy Goat Hole, would that not be, if you took one, and I don't know, that land belongs to the city or the town of Dolphin Island or who it belongs to, but if who owns the land where we all park?
That's part of it is the town and then the state. And then there's marsh there, which makes that a little bit challenging. when you look to the west of the ramp. Is that what you're talking about?
Well, no, wait, here's what I'm getting to, and we'll have to pick it up on another show because we're out of time, but what if we took one of the parking spots, the primest of the prime parking spot, or maybe five of them,
raffle it off
each year, and have that money go to marine resources to do programs to restore fish?
That programs might be the biggest better parking gainer that we have.
Huh?
I think we could make a substantial amount of money on that.
Yeah. I really do. I mean, there's other states that do for, you know, different game species and all that, do these raffles to get this governor's tag or whatever. What about the governor's parking spot? We'll call it the governor's parking spot. We have one for, you know, have a couple at the launches, like one for Boggy Point or one for, you know, for Billy Good Hole. And we have this special thing, and each year we all can put in for $2 or whatever it is. And if you get drawn and you win this lottery, the money all goes to fish recovery or, you know, working on habitat, reefs and all that stuff. And then if you win it, that is your parking place right there downtown Billy Goat Hole, front door.
I can see what's going to happen now. Sean's going to win it, and then he's going to tell all his buddies about it. And Sean paid $5,000 for it, and every weekend when Sean's not using it, he's going to lease it out to his buddies.
Well, I'm not an entrepreneur.
$200 a weekend.
I'm an entrepreneur. No, I mean, you can't blame me for that.
I'll talk to Mayor Collier. Let's see what we can do about
that. Okay, see if we get him on there. Thanks, right. Scott. We appreciate it. We'll talk again very soon.
Thanks for the opportunity, guys. Y'all have a great weekend.
All right, you too.
Happy Mother's Day.
All right, happy Mother's Day as well. And that is Director of Alabama Marine Resources, Scott Bannon, joining us. So there you go. Hopefully gives you some facts behind these changes going on in the regulations, and we'll talk about these more as more people wake up to the changes being made. We'll have this discussion going through the summer. All right, coming right back. Speaking of changes, kind of changes in the world of land. Well, Director of Wildlife and Freshwater Fisheries, Chuck Sykes, joins us to talk about slinging corn legally and a whole bunch more. Coming right back. Welcome back. FM Talk 106.5 Outdoors. Glad to have y'all here on this Mother's Day weekend. I guess the silver lining to the gray clouds, spitting rain. Well, number one, we always need rain sometimes. And also, I don't have the temptation to sneak out tomorrow morning and try to go catch a fish or something and be late to delivering breakfast to
Mama,
the Queen.
Yeah.
So, because the kids have let me down on that before. So, yeah, happy Mother's Day weekend. Y'all won't forget that tomorrow. All right, continuing our conversation about changes, things going forward, Conservation Advisory Board meeting last week down here in our neck of the woods in South Baldwin. And Director of Wildlife and Freshwater Fisheries and our buddy Chuck Sykes joins us to talk more about that. Hey, Chuck.
Good morning. Good morning. You really expect people to think you're going to carry your wife breakfast in bed?
I have done that before. Now, I might have been in trouble for something else, but I have done it before, and I spilled a bunch of stuff on the sheets, and you know, then she had to do laundry, and it was a downhill spiral from there.
No good deed goes unpunished.
this is a lot to talk about here, about one part of changes coming for wildlife in Alabama. You've talked with us over the months about it leading into the Conservation Advisory Board meeting, and I don't even have the bill number in front of me, but the governor has signed off on, and correct me in terminology, I'm going to call it the baiting bill, but what's the right term for it?
Yeah,
okay.
That's enough. I've heard it called on the Hunter's Freedom Bill, the baiting bill, you know, all kinds of stuff.
Hunter's Freedom. I'm sorry. Pull myself back together. Okay.
Yeah.
So that one that the bill that lets you, as you said last time you're on with us, I think we quoted, if you want to go sit in the pile of corn, you can.
Shoot them coming to it.
That's right. The bill basically says it is legal to hunt white-tailed deer and feral swine over feed. So it's all, you know, all bets are off, all no holds barred. You want to pour it out up under your stand, it's legal if you buy a license.
Yes. And that's a $15 license, is that right?
That's a $15 license for residents, a $51 license for non-residents.
And it doesn't matter whether you're 6 years old, if you're going to be hunting over it, or you're 80 years old and you're going to be hunting over it, you have to have this license. Even though you have to have a hunting license, a state license hunting license. You have to have this permit license to hunt over feed, right?
That is correct.
Yes.
No exemptions apply. So over 65, under 16, resident landowners hunting on their own property, if you choose to hunt over feed the way the legislature wrote this bill, you have to have a license. I want to make this perfectly clear.
Yeah, who wrote it?
The DCNR did not write this bill, did not bring the bill up, hadn't been pushing for it for the past 10 years. This is 100% legislative.
You mean there weren't any biologists, no whitetail deer experts on this?
I can tell you this. You know, every year up until this year, we have been opposed to the bill.
Why the change? Yeah.
This year, we met with the sponsor because, look, let's face it, all the stars were lining up that this bill was going to pass. So we met with the sponsor and asked him to place an amendment on the bill which would allow the Commissioner of Conservation the ability to suspend the baiting privilege without refund and to regulate or manage the feeding of wild game. All right, Nishon, that's huge, in my opinion, for the Department of Conservation. As y'all well know, it is legal to feed deer 365 days a year.
Right.
So now, in the event of a disease, the commissioner can suspend baiting and manage and regulate feeding. So that gives us the ability to stop feeding in areas to try to help slow the spread of disease. For me, that was enough for me to say, okay.
Worthwhile trade-off. Right. It gives you a tool you didn't have. I mean, prior to this, if we would have had a CWD outbreak in the state, God forbid that ever happens, but you couldn't have done anything about people feeding. We would have tried,
but I don't know if it would have stuck. Now, legislatively, we were given the authority to do that. And if you see on Facebook and hear around the coffee pot, this is all just money. Just follow the money. Well, I got news for you. The money was placed on that bill 3 years ago, mm-hmm. and we opposed it every year. So it ain't all about the money. But that amendment that gave the department the ability to manage feeding, that was worth it. In my opinion, the department is in a better shape today than it was before it passed, just because of that one amendment.
Chuck, what I see, too, I mean, really, Alabama, as far as I know, is the first one to have a $15 fee to be able to have a permit to be able to feed and hunt over game. But let me tell you, I foresee all the other states looking at Alabama and saying, man, look at the amount of money that they're getting for the conservation department, and look at the amount of money that Alabama's getting for federal money off of this too, that I think you're going to see all these other states say, we're going to do the same thing. We're going to start charging a fee to be able to hunt over bait.
I cannot disagree with you.
Yeah.
Yeah, and I think that's the nuance. When it says it's about the money, people have the, you know, on social media, a simplistic view, and I would argue to them, say, it is, let's say it is about the money. It is about getting Alabama and Alabama hunters, fishermen, or hunters in this case, excise tax dollars we've paid to come back to the state to be able to give us new places to hunt, new places to, you know, launch boats, new places to go enjoy the outdoors.
Absolutely. And for the first time in the history of Alabama, we will be able to count those exempt hunters that have never purchased a license. That's huge.
Yes.
For not only in just state revenue for us to put management on the ground, but also in those federal matching dollars that we are apportioned by the number of licenses we sell. So this is
again, we're better off than we were before it started. Mm-hmm. Even if you don't look at the dollars are just icing on the cake.
Yeah. You know, me and Sean have talked about this for years on the show, is, you know, either do a flat out, be able to feed the deer, wherever you want to do it, however you want to do it, or just don't do it at all. You know, that gray area in there, I mean, that had to be bad for the conservation officers trying to go out and figure out, well, is he 100 yards away or is he 80 yards away? Is the bait behind the bushes enough or is it not behind the bushes enough? You know, it was just a gray area for the conservation department. And without that gray area now, all you have to do is just check and see, hey, are you feeding corn in there? Let me see your permit. And now they can go to, if you got a poaching problem, they can put more emphasis on poaching problem. If you got a night hunting problem, you can put more emphasis on night hunting problems. You don't have to be so much out in the woods trying to catch somebody hunting over corn anymore. So I think that's a good thing.
Yeah, we don't make the laws. We just enforce them.
That's right.
I can't disagree with you on that.
Yes. So I'm glad they either not do it at all or do it like all the other states do, just wide open. Right.
One other thing I want people to understand, I want them to listen closely. This is not a political mandate. It's not a law that you have to feed. It's not a law that you have to hunt over bait. This is personal preference.
That's right.
So if you don't want to feed, don't feed.
You don't have to.
If you want to hunt over bait, buy your license.
Yeah.
If you like the way the area definition is, that is still in effect. So you can have your feeders 130 yards and 10 yards in the woods, and you don't have to buy a license.
That's
it
right.
It is personal preference.
Yeah.
This is not a mandate.
I am starting a new business. I just ordered 10 silos, mm-hmm. and they hold 50,000 pounds of corn each way, and all you have to do is drive your truck under it. And
now, that's my idea.
I fill up the back of the truck, and it's $125 a load.
That's my idea. It's a drive-through corn barn, or I'm thinking about with the helicopter corn to you. We'll drop it right to you.
Yeah. It's going to be something else.
Well, I may be wrong, but I don't think there will be 10 tons of corn more sold this year than it was last year.
Probably
that's
not.
Truth. That's
probably
truth right not. There. That's truth right there.
Yeah.
The people were doing, you know, people
are doing,
like
it
you
anyway.
Said, we are not, okay, we are not required. We are not required by the state of Alabama to bait.
Yeah.
No.
Just checking. No. Okay.
And just because your neighbor's doing it doesn't mean you have to.
You know, but that's the pain. Okay, that's the pain. And let's talk about that from, obviously, your position as a director, but gosh, you've been doing this so long, studying wildlife, and management and how to maximize potential for property. Tell me how that worry, that arms race, the corn escalation rate is not a true thing. I mean, people have that worry. I've had that worry. I hear people's feeders going off, and I'm like, that's why I'm not, they're all over there at the feeder. You know, I mean, am I wrong?
No, you're right, but I think it's more people's perception than the animal's perception. In my opinion, as a biologist, the property with the best habitat management is going to win, period. You know, you can feed tons and tons and tons of corn, but if I've got better habitat, I'm still going to control the deer and the turkey. That's my opinion as a biologist.
You know, the main thing
that's the important one.
One of the main things I see on this is the Conservation Department strictly needs to enforce the 3-deer limit. I mean, that's what it's all about. You get 3 deer to shoot. So whether you shoot them in a green field, shoot them over corn, shoot them wherever, you know, you get
three bucks.
You get to shoot 3 bucks, and it's over with. You know, you're done for the year, whether that's the first week of the season or you last all the way through to the last week of the season. You know, that gives the Conservation Department something else to check, you know, where you can go out, come and check, hey, did you register that deer? And I bet you there's still a lot of people out there that's not registering their deer, and it's the law to do that.
You are 100% correct.
Yes. I mean, I'm sure – I don't know how many people y'all caught last year that – didn't register a deer or haven't been registering a deer, but I bet you there's still a bunch of them.
There's a bunch. Unfortunately,
yeah.
There's a bunch.
And especially
now,
I will say that
a lot of people are seeing now that this was not government overreach. This is us not trying to get in your business. We're not going to come in the middle of the night and steal your guns and all that kind of stuff. This is a management tool. So we are getting a little better compliance, but we still have a long way to go.
Yes. If you're just joining us, talking to Director of Wildlife and Freshwater Fisheries, Chuck Sykes, about going forward, the baiting bill, the Hunter's Freedom Bill going forward. And would it be, I'll say one thing before we go to the break, though. If you look about the numbers, look about numbers on what this means for getting federal dollars back here for our state. Take my family. We're a family of four, okay? I am the only, and we're, you know, dang, we're in it. Yeah. A hunting family. I mean, yeah. Except for my wife, who's just tolerant. But the children are in it. I account for one license right now. One license.
Right.
One license. As of this year, if we wanted to hunt over corn or something like that, when my children go with me and they're going to sit there and get... Now I just tripled the amount of license potential for my family. And if you multiply that across the state, Chuck, that's a bunch of folks.
It is. And again, we will actually get a representative count of people who are hunting in Alabama. And what folks need to understand is that puts us in a better position to bring money back to the state and put it on the ground for wildlife management, property acquisition, you name it.
Awesome. And we're going to talk about this some more on the backside of the break. Coming right back, more of FM Talk 106.5 Outdoors. Y'all stay close. All right, welcome back. FM Talk 106.5 Outdoors. Sean Sullivan, Mike Ward. Continuing our conversation with Director of Wildlife and Freshwater Fisheries, Chuck Sykes, and talked about the baiting bill, now right. What's legal going forward. And this will be in effect when we go into this deer season, I guess. Or when is it in effect?
You can buy your license right now if you want to hunt feral swine this summer.
Okay. All right. So, if you're going to be putting the feeder out and shooting pigs, go ahead and get it now. But it's already online. Will it be at the people who go buy their licenses in stores? I guess they'll just ask for that.
It'll take that a little bit longer to filter down. But yeah, anywhere that you buy a license, it will be available for purchase. If you buy one right now, you will have to buy another one September 1st.
Okay.
License is renewed, but you can get one now and feed hogs and shoot hogs over them all summer.
All right.
But in reality, before this came along, you could do that and it wouldn't cost anything to do that in the past, right?
If you get a permit.
Yeah. Okay. But in the past, like last year, you could put corn out this time of the year and hunt
with hog, permit.
Without a permit.
With a permit.
Oh, you still
with
had a permit. Permit. Okay. I did. Okay. All right.
Citizen's arrest.
Okay, well, no, I don't.
The statute of limitations is not up. I'll have Kevin Hill come by there shortly.
The good thing is I don't hog hunt during the summer.
But that's a whole other show we got to do because, I mean, I had read a lot about it and in touring one of the facilities with a bunch of folks from media and Director Sykes, I mean, seeing just the real scientific, biological discussion of eliminating feral hogs. I mean, it's fun to go shoot hogs. I like to shoot a hog, but if we're going to get rid of them, we got to be trapping, right? I mean,
absolutely.
Yeah, I mean, shooting's fun. It's fun. I like to shoot a hog. I like to eat them, but that's just enjoying probably the outdoors. That's not eliminating the problem.
Yeah. You shoot one, the rest of them are gone. You know, that's the problem. It might be 30 there, but to get two or three out of that 30 would be hard. If you get one, you're good. So
that's
I agree. Trapping's about the only way you can do it, to do it and make a difference.
Yeah, we'll have to do a whole program on that. I want to the subject is funny. During the news break there with the three of us talking, immediately goes into turkey season and review. I know I said we're going to talk all fishing on today's show, and that y'all just we got to get it out of our system. I want to talk about this year and the way the dates fell for the start of turkey season and what it looks like for this coming year.
Yeah, the advisory board voted this past year to have a set starting date of the third Saturday in March rather than have the 15th. And the idea behind that would give the gobblers a little more time to breed. So this year, the season came in on March 16th, so you lost one day. Well, next year, there's already been a bunch of folks looking and complaining. The season comes in the 21st.
Okay.
So, you know, that's 6 days difference from the 15th.
So it will be, and it will not be made up on the back end. It's going to be on those years we're going to have a shorter season.
I'm giving you 3 more days. It's going to go out Sunday, May the 3rd.
Really?
Oh, wow. I'll be having to take pictures my first time hunting turkeys in May in Alabama. That's cool. That's cool. And this is, I got to tell you, I like it because I'm the weekend warrior. I got a job here at this radio station where, you know, I get to see everybody's pictures and hear their stories from, you know, a midweek opener, but I can't ever go. So, I mean, completely self-serving, but, you know, let alone the biology and what's good for the turkeys. Let's talk about what's good for me, Chuck. Yeah. And it's good for me.
We're giving you another weekend.
Yeah.
So, yeah, that's
at the end.
Yeah, that's good.
At the end.
That's good. Okay. What about that? I mean, you mentioned letting the gobblers do the breeding, and that's and kind of talk to folks that never thought about that, the biology of why you start a turkey season when you do, why it's different state to state. What's behind that?
Look, it's different. Southeast-wide, every state is concerned with turkey numbers not being as robust as they were 10 or 15 years ago. And a lot of the scientific data is showing that too many gobblers are being harvested before peak nesting season. So in theory, what they're saying is gobblers are being harvested before they have time to breed hens.
And so,
all right.
So yeah, that's reducing population.
Give them another week to breed, and things should get better as far as recruitment.
Okay.
You know, we're testing some of that on our WMAs with a delayed start. We're doing the turkey research project with Auburn that will finish up this fall. And there's a lot of other states doing those things, too. So the board decided to make it that Saturday, the third Saturday in March, a set time. And that at least gives them a few more days. And then we'll see what the research on the WMA shows, to see if we're headed in the right direction or not. But next year it's going to come in on the 21st. But to give you a few extra days, the last day of April, I think, is on a Thursday. So we're going to give you Friday, Saturday, and Sunday, which is May 1st, 2nd, and 3rd to hunt.
Good stuff. All right, we'll talk more about that going forward. Thank you for your time this morning, Chuck, and we'll talk again very soon.
Absolutely. Thanks for having me.
All right. Director of Wildlife and Freshwater Fisheries, Chuck Sykes, on with us. We got to get out of here. Prep Sports Report on the way next. Y'all have a great one.